about batteries?
No, I had to plug it into
the wall. Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, let's see if I can see. This is 27 November. Interview with Cecil Sargent.
Neil
Sargent and Richard Gaines. Okay. And you were born on Kodiak?
Yes. Yeah, my parents were born here too. Mm-hmm. And I was working for Steve Rick, Puget Sound, starting in 1940. And started as a flunky, and then I got into the carpenter game as an apprentice carpenter.
Mm-hmm. That was out here at the Navy base then?
On the Navy base, Kodiak Navy base. And then in the spring of 1941, I got into the carpenter apprentice program. And, mm-hmm. And worked on several of the big buildings, the hangars, coal storage plant, and also made or worked on 1,000 tent frames for the Army.
Okay, for the tent city that was out in Swampy Acres, what we call Swampy Acres.
No, the most of it was right where the Mark Air Airport and Apron,
mm-hmm.
and the runway didn't extend in there.
Was that called Fort Greeley, or what was the name of the tent?
No, Fort Greeley was the area where the use of homes or the
Nimitz Park.
Nimitz Park is now.
And what was the area? You see, the Navy had a hospital up on Aviation Hill and a bunch of other stuff too, didn't they?
I don't know where. No, the hospital was right in on the base.
Was that the one we just tore down? The one was just torn down.
I believe so.
Yeah. That was a good building.
But they, the original contract, which covered the three main hangars, coal storage and supply, plus the Navy, a lot of the Navy house, fourplexes and
mm-hmm.
all that Navy housing, the commander's quarters. The original contract was a little over $4 million.
Mm.
That included two runways, kind of short. Also, the seaplane ramp and the temporary dock and one main pier,
Nyman's
permanent pier.
The Nyman's pier down there at the end, or was it in the closer end?
No, it'd be the pier that's closer in.
Okay, the cargo pier, today's cargo pier, has been rebuilt and put in with steel now.
Yeah, but it was all built for $4 million, a little over $4 million. Yeah.
That wouldn't build one of those hangars today.
No.
Hi, Wayne. Yeah. Did that include the, at $4 million, did that include the Upper Government Hill, the duplexes, and the tower?
No.
No, there was no tower.
It was just the housing that was close to the
fourplexes.
Woman's Bay area there.
Yeah, my office is in one of the fourplexes, right across from the chapel.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, those were built much later.
That's nice.
That type.
Oh, the four.
Double decker.
Yeah.
Enlisted housing and then officer housing.
Yeah, the officer's housing had the chimneys in, had the fireplace.
Right.
Yeah, I've been in both. Yeah, my office is in a fourplex right across from where the base chapel and where the old hospital used to be. And I've lived in one of those duplexes that face where Bob Skog lives. I lived in a duplex on the next block last time I was there. Those are fine buildings.
I'll say they.
They're well built.
Everything was first class material.
Mm-hmm.
And all for construction.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also worked on the barracks in Fort Greeley. And like I say, building those tents,
mm-hmm.
The tent frames. And a cool storage plant that's by a Buskin.
Yeah.
I worked on that one.
The one that's by the Buskin.
It's
on down towards this end of the runway, isn't it?
Yeah, just this side of the Buskin River.
Mm-hmm.
Right by the highway there.
Oh, okay. That's now just a warehouse now?
Right.
Okay.
Coal storage plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some concrete pads outside that might have been for heavy equipment, but they're not used for anything. It's just a warehouse.
Mm-hmm. But
that was coal storage.
Anyway, in summer of 1941, I started working on a night shift. And so then during the day, I had time to spare, so I started building a little, what I thought was going to be an office building, but it turned out that there seemed to be a need for restaurants in town, so I made it into a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Then I quit the main Navy base job and opened a restaurant, and as soon as I did that, I was fair game for to be drafted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I got drafted in October and went over to Anchorage.
That was October 42?
In October 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to Anchorage for about 6 weeks of training.
That's pretty intense.
and then they put me in the 177th Engineers in Anchorage. And in February of 1943, I got loaded on a train, went to Seward, and got on the Liberty ship and shipped for Amchitka, but we made a little stop outside of Spruce Cape, and the ship made a couple of turns just moving around that area.
Mm-hmm.
And
What kind of vessel? What kind of ship was it?
It was a Liberty ship.
Okay.
And I thought, gosh, I'll be able to get off the boat and go home and visit my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And but no luck. They had a here. There was a submarine net that went from Chehovka Cove across the bay to Woody Island.
Chehovka Cove is this?
That's
the left.
Over by the beachcombers.
Yeah.
Right in front of the beachcombers.
Right.
And then we went out of there and picked up an escort and went on out to Dutch. And at Dutch there, we weren't allowed inside the net either. And it was really wild out there, and it was snowing and blowing. And you could see those little outposts up on the hills above the harbor in Dutch. And
were those the concrete bunkers above Dutch there up on the mountain?
Well, they didn't.
They wouldn't.
Well, they didn't have any. I don't think they had any concrete bunkers at that time.
I seem to remember something up on the mountains. Could have been, I don't know.
But they
might
had
been
several outposts up there. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, after a few hours, we picked up another escort and went on to Amchitka. And when we got up near Amchitka, there was a pretty good storm brewing, and we stayed behind an island there for about half a day, and until we could. The weather let down so we can get into Constantine Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in and got off on a barge and went down this, you know, those nets on the side of the ship.
Oh, yeah.
And it was nice weather. First day we got to Amchitka, and the 813th regiment was already there, and they had built some roads, and built a small dock, which we landed at with a barge, and then stayed in pup tents the first night, and the that morning woke up and there was about 4 or 5 inches of snow on top of my sleeping bag.
Mm.
But that was mild compared to some of the weather we experienced there.
Yeah, and if it gets that far up the chain, it gets kind of nasty. Did you help build the runway and the hangars?
Our battalion helped build the runways and the hangars, the gas. Gas tank farm,
mm-hmm.
Bunch of warehouses around the island.
Mm-hmm.
And
have you been out there since?
No, I was just I was out to Dutch this summer,
mm-hmm.
But I had no reason to go up out there.
It's been all modernized. Some of the original hangar buildings are still there in the warehouses. When they pulled out from the Atomic Energy Commission, when they pulled out of there, they left a lot of equipment there. It looks like there may be some more life coming back to that island, federal life, that is. I don't know what exactly what, because we've been in and out of there, and we used Amchitka for part of an exercise not long ago. We're using the runways. It looks like it might have some use yet. They're still using your buildings.
Yeah, well, that's they can't afford it.
How long were you out there?
Just under 2 years.
At Amchitka? Just at Amchitka?
Right, yeah.
Pretty crowded?
Not too crowded. There was one or two infantry companies there, I think it's about all. And then our battalion, the 813th Regiment, it was a port company, and there was the 250th Coast Artillery was moved from Kodiak out there.
Mm-hmm.
And an Air Force and an aircraft out. That's about it.
Were of the engineers that you were a part of, was it 171, 171st?
177.
Was most of that Alaskan?
No.
Alaskan people?
No, it was made up of Coast Guard. From Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Mississippi. About it, and then they took in a few specialists from different organizations. And they need bulldozer operators and crane operator and stuff like that.
Did you go in as a basic carpenter? Or?
Well, I was just I was picked as a message center clerk.
Mm.
And that's what I spend my time as.
Mm-hmm.
And I was. I don't know how it is now, but they seem to pick not people for, not for what they're trained for, but for just what they need.
Yeah, still works out.
So we had battalion clerk was a professional photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one of the company cooks was actually a airplane mechanic.
Mm. It must have been in short supply back then too. But what did you do as a comms center clerk?
Oh, I picked all up all the mail, the messages from headquarters, and then distributed them. around the battalion.
Okay. I've done that.
But I get a kick out of, you know when you think about war, well, you think about shooting, so when I first went down to the in the general's tent, he had a tent about headquarters, was about as big as this room.
Mm-hmm.
And
about 12 by 16.
Yeah. So he's in talking to one of his aides or something, and I go in for the messages, and I see these holes in this tent, you know. I thought, gosh, have they been shooting at our general?
Mm-hmm.
But what it was, you know, the coal stoves, they give off sparks, and the sparks catch on the tent.
Oh. Was it an open coal stove? Or just when you're stoking it?
We were given those little what do they call them? The collapsible or little heaters, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you could burn coal or wood in.
Made out of just sheet steel?
You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're made in a top and a bottom, and you for storage, you just take them apart right in the middle and store them,
mm-hmm.
and they take less room. But young fella, he doesn't know anything about.
Things have changed.
Thinking about
methodologies have changed so much over the years. That's interesting to me.
I'm
kind of mechanically inclined to mess around a little bit.
But the weather was pretty bad. We had to, like, we had our, you know, two pyramidal tents.
What's a pyramidal tent?
It's a tent that you see that the army uses so much, shaped like a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's so, like the six-sided squad tent. It's kind of round.
No, it's four-sided, but it comes to a point.
Oh, the wall tent.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right, and so we had one of them for our living quarters and one for our office. We had a switchboard in our office. Or headquarters,
mm-hmm.
and then we also all took turns having a shift at the on the switchboard.
Mm-hmm.
So this one night I had the night shift and about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, the switchboard started moving out of the tent, and I thought the guys were pulling a prank on me. We're all just pulling pranks on each other.
Mm-hmm.
But what was happening? They were removing the overburden from around where they took sand for the runway,
mm-hmm.
and I'd take it past our outfit and dump it over the cliff in the back of our cantonment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using these Euclid trucks, great big.
Yes, I know what
trucks.
That.
You know, well they.
3 yard truck.
They're 10.
9 yards.
10, or 10, 15 yards, something like that. It's a big truck.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Tires about 6 feet tall.
Right. And so. Now, our wires went over the road 18 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And they.
That's not high enough for Euclid. Euclid's well, 20, yeah. feet, 20 feet tall.
Well, if they didn't forget to let their
bed down, yeah.
We were okay. But this one guy, he forgot to let his bed down. And he stuck up there 22 foot with the bed.
Yeah.
And so it was taking the, it took our test board where our wires are connected.
Yeah.
And then almost drug the switchboard along with him. I went out yelling, and here he was roaring down the street with a trailing our wires and our test board.
Yeah. Mm. That'd be pretty exciting. How did you feel about the changes? You're born and raised in Kodiak, and then the Navy comes storming in here, or Navy shows up and start building a base.
Well. One of the good changes was I got a job right away.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm making about 70. Yeah, I made, when I started doing carpenter work, I started at 55% of the wage scale, which was Seattle wage scale, which is a dollar. Carpenters were getting $1.25 an hour at the time. So I got 55% of that for the first year.
So about 60 cents an hour?
They are around there.
Mm-hmm. Was that a good wage for Cousin?
That was good, yeah. Yeah.
What did you do before that?
Well, I just got...
So you would have been about, what, about 18?
Well, no, I was...
Mickey Young.
I was 20 years old when I got the job at the base.
Okay.
Well, 19. Yeah.
I mean, did you work downtown here fishing or construction or
well,
something
then,
like that before
well,
the Navy
came? I went fishing with my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just, you know, short time and 2-3 months in the summer.
Can you give me some feel for what the community was like before all these military dollars came in and made it big?
Well, it was pretty.
All these federal dollars, anyway.
Pretty sleepy community, except for the fishing, and we. Our family had cows, and we had a barn right in town, and it was one of my jobs was to milk the cows before that.
Mm-hmm.
And our barn door opened right onto the street, and we just let the cows out in the street.
Sure. A lot of farming communities used to be that way.
But
I've seen some pictures of Kodiak, I guess, pre-war, and a couple of oil paintings, like down to art festival at the high school. And I'm trying to think of what was here, what was physically here. And there were some buildings down around Cannery Row, you know, and of course the harbor, the breakwater wasn't here.
Right.
And the seminary was here, the Baptist church was here, I think. Was that here before World War II, or is that built in the 50s?
Yes, that was built about 1939.
And I think Kraft's, the current Kraft building's that's pretty sick. That's after 60. Most of everything down here by Kraft's has been rebuilt.
Right. Yeah.
But wasn't Kraft's kind of over where the what we call the square is today, or was it in the same location?
It was more like. Right about where the public toilets in by mm-hmm. the boat harbor.
Okay, yeah. And Mr. and Mrs. Sutliff started there. He started his thing up here on the side of the hill, didn't he?
No, he was right up just right around where Kodiak Auto Center is.
Okay, yeah. And so he got wiped out too.
not really. He just got moved. Yeah, he just got. I mean, you know.
Just picked up the building and moved it. This is now, yeah. How many in a downtown area here? The number of buildings is it about doubled now, or tripled?
Oh.
Over what it was before World War II?
Oh yeah, it's 10 times bigger.
Okay, there we go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's about I imagine 300 or 400.
300 or 400 people. Great. I would love to have. I've often thought I would love to have been a teenager here, and have had these mountains to go up and down when I was about half crazy and 16, you know, and have a 22 rifle, and just to go ptarmigan hunting, fox hunting, stuff like that. I enjoyed trapping as a kid, and enjoyed hunting.
Yeah, of course the deer were introduced, you know, when I was a kid, there was no deer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was foxes, yes, there was.
Mm-hmm. Probably fox, rabbit, and ptarmigan.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbits, yeah.
Rabbits are fun. I hope you're still getting some.
No, my wife, she doesn't care for them.
Mm.
No. She doesn't care for deer either. She was raised on Whidbey Island, you know, Puget Sound.
Oh, on Whidbey Island?
Yeah. And they used to eat quite a bit of deer meat, but she said she tasted it once and didn't like it, and mm-hmm. never did care to taste it again.
Oh, well, this is a different animal. This deer up here is a different animal.
Yeah,
anyway,
it is.
It's good.
Yeah, sure has a good taste to it.
Does that. So we had about 400-500 people before the Navy before the military showed up here, and all this investment.
Right. Yeah.
All this $4 million investment.
And then before, say in the late 30s, or even early 30s, they when the Kodiak Fisheries ran their cannery down towards the past the boat harbor there.
Mm-hmm.
They imported Japanese to as workmen
mm-hmm.
in the cannery, and so they would the Japanese that. Get a hold of sake, you know, and they'd and they try to get into town, and local people didn't want them in town.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the Japanese knew that, but when they were worked up on sake, well then they'd try to get in town anyway.
Just like drunks all over the world.
right. But before the war, before the Boot Harbor was thought of, there was a nice beach out in front of the town. Mm-hmm. And
I've seen a picture of that.
Yeah.
And you had a nice little creek run right down here where the library is.
Yeah. And
and a lagoon over here.
When the I think when the Coast and Geodetic Survey came around, making charts of the areas, well, they started form baseball teams. The Geodetic Survey would have a team, and the town would have a team, and they played hardball on that sand and gravel when the tide was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the beach then?
Yeah.
Must have been something. So before this all started, how much did the population jump? Was it in a hurry, and was there any conflict or cultural shock with all these people coming in all of a sudden for a quiet, sleepy community, or the people in the community?
I think before that, I think the crab, the halibut fleet coming in was quite an influence, because they'd come in and would die up here, of course, before the season opened, I guess, and so the bars were busy.
Oh yeah.
I think that had quite an influence, because my mother and father, they're both teetotalers.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much their, especially their boys, but there was six boys and five girls.
Was that an average family? Or
yeah, it was a
to have eight or ten children?
Yeah. And that was kind of normal.
Mm-hmm. Great. And with all this money and the influx and jobs and things like that, when the Navy showed up, that was just all welcome and go to work and another source of income.
It was just after the Depression. Depression was still on.
Mm-hmm.
And when Navy base started, that was
kind of a good,
sharpened arm.
Yeah, kind of a godsend then.
Yeah, and it attracted a lot of people up from Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, first thing they'd want to do after a paycheck or two was to get their wife up or the family up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that, in those days, there was still a territory, you know.
Yeah.
And there was a judge in town who, saw that everybody obeyed the laws, and then he was also married people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a demand for from these people who were working out there. They wanted to get their family up, and so they needed land to build houses on.
Yeah.
So he started selling pieces of land around for let's see, 500 square feet for $5. That was the price of the land. Yes. And so the reason I know this, because my brother-in-law, here, I'll show you one spot.
Let me try. So $5 bought a small piece of land, 500 square feet, before World War II. Well, back in
right.
The 30s, or no?
Back in the, yes, the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
38, 39.
Okay. And then
I imagine 40 until...
You left in 40. You left in 42, and you came back in 44. What kind of changes took place? What did you see when you got home?
Well, the Navy base was still operating,
mm-hmm.
and so the
increased in size.
Yes, it was still being improved on. And one thing that they improved on was they built the airport tower.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1953, I worked on the transmitter building. And the transmitter tower.
Mm-hmm. One's a Buskin Lake?
Right. And and I also worked on the 450-foot tower that was built later. Let's see.
The real big one right behind. I thought that was a tower.
Well, the tallest one is 600 foot,
mm-hmm.
and the 450-foot tower is on the left as you go on this side of Buskin.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Back on the other side of Buskin,
right.
from the Comstock. That's being changed around too. It's being consolidated now.
Oh, is that right?
The receiver site is going to be all remoted, and it'll be operating all from the transmitter site. All the operators that would normally be out at the receiver site will be working at the transmitter building now.
Mm.
And they're moving there all the Comstay offices that were up at T1 up on Aviation Hill will now be inside the main building, the transmitter building. I hope that works out. What happened to town? Did it, in terms of growth? People's attitudes stay pretty easy. Things like
yes,
that.
There was it kept growing. Some people who had came in was with the when the Navy base was built, stayed here,
mm-hmm.
and so the Navy base provided a lot of employment. So, and there was new shops being built to support the whole
thing. I remember reading about the jewelry store. Which one is it? The one's on the square now, right in the middle.
Kodiak Jewelry.
Yeah, but I can't remember the man's name.
Oh,
it was named after him.
Oh, Normans?
Normans.
He came up as an employee at the Navy base.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess he fared pretty well out of all that.
Yes, he did. Business wasn't that good at first, you know.
Well, he made himself a home.
Right.
That's good. I hope to do the same thing here soon in retirement. Anyway, there was something else that's escaping my brain right now. The Kodiak community did it double in size, the downtown area, or triple in size, or over that time period with people bringing their families up and things like that? We had a population of about 400 before.
After the war, it's about 800, I guess.
So just about doubled.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Uh-huh. And fishing. The fishing industry, salmon fishing,
mm-hmm.
Bourbon, you know, it got better because the fishermen got a better price. In 1937, I think we were getting $0.025 per rent, or $0.035 each, you know. Each fish, no matter how big it was, you know.
Yeah.
And pinks, it was 3.5, and then I think 2 cents for these, I think, pinks. And, but the traps were still in, so...
That's what I wanted to ask you. Were the traps still... Did they use traps over here?
No.
They used traps... No. I know somebody said they used traps at Carlick.
Carlick was it.
I expect they probably used traps in Old Bay, too.
And not in Olga Bay, but out on the outer areas around... You know, on the approaches, the Cape Alitak had one.
Sitkanak. Between, out in the pass, between Olga Bay and Sitkanak Island?
Yeah.
Thinking Cape Alitak is kind of...
Yeah, Cape...
It's kind of the eastern side of the bay there, isn't it?
Cape Hepburn and...
I'd have to look at the chart. It's been a while. It's been a while since I've flown down there.
And in Uganek and Uyak and Raspberry Straits.
Just floated a trap in Raspberry Straits?
No, they were all driven traps.
They were driven?
Mm-hmm.
What's a driven trap?
they use piles.
Yeah.
Pile driven. Pile drivers.
Okay, the permanent trap.
Yeah, but they had to remove them every...
Take the net off?
Every fall.
Did they just take the net off, or did they take the pilings out too?
No.
They have, on the East Coast, they have what they call a pound net, which is basically a box trap.
Yeah.
And it'll have a couple of wings on it to funnel the fish in as the tide comes in. Yeah. The ones I saw in the history books for pictures like in Southeastern, were basically just floating.
Yeah, floating I guess they just took the web off and.
Yeah, but they use hard pilings up here.
Yeah.
And fixed traps.
Mm-hmm.
Would that? Did you think that really hurt? Did that hurt the salmon industry real bad?
Well.
It should have hurt the fishermen.
It hurt the fishermen the worst because with the traps, all they have to, after the trap is set, all they needed was a watchman, you know. And,
yeah.
And then the folks would come in every day and scoop the fish up and...
Yeah. Braille,
right.
Kind of a trap box, I guess.
Right, yeah. They just had to raise up a net, you know.
Yeah.
And then
it was pretty efficient fishing.
Right. So that was the main thing to get rid of it. And
what was it like fishing off a boat back then? Without, you probably didn't have all the power fancy doodads we've got today.
Yeah, everything was by hand. And,
you didn't have outboards either.
No outboards.
If you're doing it, did they have purse seiners then? Or would you just
run a beach set? No, we'd make round hulls, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a. They started about 1935, I guess. They started with the purse rings.
You have some kind of jitney engine to haul it back in, or just haul it back in by hand?
No, we have a winch.
Yeah.
That was powered off the main engine.
Okay, so you had some hydraulics.
Yeah, there. Right.
Okay.
There was no hydraulics in those. It was just mechanical davits.
Davit? No.
Yeah, well, right, yeah.
Is there like a windlass or something to drag it around to haul?
Yeah. Like here's the side of the boat, and then you'd be the winch and the davit on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And then have blocks in here, and so you pick up the lines, and then just one man in each davit that is around, and just loop the line around the davit and. It'll be pulled in by friction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you had the hand braille and all that.
And well, we also used the davit for had a block on the on the boom, and we'd braille in with say using the power off the davit.
I've never fished like that, not commercial. Wouldn't mind trying it sometime. Just one time so I can say why I didn't want to do it no more. Sounds like a lot of hard work.
Anymore, it's easy.
Is it? Well, I might be able to do it then. I've had invitations to go down to Olga Bay and all putts around some of the beach sites. And I'd like to try that sometime. That may be something.
Yeah.
For a Sunday job.
Yeah, they've been really coining the dough down there. And mostly it's teachers that have got those permits.
They only work 9 months a year.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the people I know are teachers. Anyway. Anything else you can think about World War II? At all? We could talk about fishing and hunting and everything.
Well, During the time that I was working at the Navy base, I worked started in 40, and then when Pearl Harbor happened, I was working there and kept on working. As you know, I was deferred because I was working on a Navy base, or everybody did.
Yeah.
And so one time in the winter of 1942, I had gone to a movie, and the name of the movie was The Invaders.
Right.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
And so we had been given we had been given rifles to or access to rifles that that we could use in case of an invasion,
mm-hmm.
by the Japanese, and so we, if an alert was sounded, we were supposed to get these rifles and go with the outfit up into the hills. And so while I was in this movie, an alert was sounded, and it was at the time that the Midway battle, and mm-hmm. the Japanese sent ships up towards Dutch Harbor. And they were headed, they had hit Dutch Harbor, and then the fleet was headed towards Kodiak, but then they returned back because of this little plane base that Roosevelt had built there at Umnak.
Yeah.
And but anyway, I never did find my outfit that I was supposed to contact,
mm-hmm.
and I never did get up into the hills.
Mm.
Well, that's one thing about.
But that happened while you were still working here.
Right. Yeah.
The Dutch Harbor bombing.
Right.
Was there much fear in the local area for invasion?
Well, yes, there was. After Pearl Harbor, the town after a while was blacked out at night, and there was a fear of invasion. And especially after the Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor and started coming up towards here.
There was a true concern here for that. Somebody once told me that there was some dummy buildings or facade buildings to try to confuse the Japanese and impossible in an invasion. American River Valley or something like that?
I never heard of it. No.
And Kodiak ended up pretty well fortified. We've been in bunkers all the way to Sequel Point.
Right. From Narrow Cape clean over to out to Shuyak, even.
Mm-hmm.
Spruce Island.
Permanent placements like on Long Island here, these concrete bunkers.
Right, yes. Long Island. Mm-hmm. Spruce Island.
And had a trail all the way into Elbow Creek, Sheraton Bay. Some kind of thing up where the Kiskisha lay is now. There's a spotting emplacement up there on top of the mountain or something. And Heitman Mountain.
No, I've never
something up there.
Heard about anything like that.
No?
But
there were emplacements all over the place anyway.
I remember one incident, about the time I was drafted, in fact, I was, around the area where either I was being interviewed or something, but anyway, this one first lieutenant, mm-hmm. Army first lieutenant, he was a really chastising his non-com because of not being alert, I guess. He was in charge of outposts up on Pillar Mountain, and the army had a little four-wheel little road going up to Pillar Mountain to go to take men to the outposts up there, and he was really chastising somebody for not being alert, mm-hmm. and it was at that time it was so cold. It was around 10 degrees. The wind was blowing, and there was snow all around.
Yeah.
It was cold, but I was impressed by him because, you know, it was a long ways from the fighting, mm-hmm. but he was taking it serious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about cold in the wet. How was the clothing then? What kind of clothes did you wear when you ended up prison? And then when you got in service, what kind of, did they give you clothes that were good enough? Apparently they kept you alive. I don't know.
Well, they didn't have my size, and when I was drafted, in fact, they were short of my size, so when I went on leave one time, you get a pass to go on leave, mm-hmm. on weekends sometimes. I was walking down the street in Anchorage, and then an MP come up there, and he says, "Where are you supposed to be?" And I had civilian pants on, and mm-hmm. I had borrowed an army jacket, and he says, "Well, I says, I'm with the 177th Engineers." He says, "You get on that